Hello everyone, welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome today's program, Sung Choi, who is AVP of Solution Consulting at E2Open. And today we're going to talk about mitigating forced labor risks, strategies for a resilient supply chain. So forced labor has been a problem in supply chain management for a long time. The good news is that governments and companies have been taking action over the past few years to try to eradicate this problem. But that said, it's really not an easy, problem to solve. In fact, in a survey we conducted with members of our Indago supply chain research community back in March of 2021, a plurality of the respondents said that screening suppliers to ensure no environmental violations or human rights abuses existed in their end-to-end supply chain was, quote, either extremely difficult or very difficult. So I think, for those that are on the front lines of this, they want to do good, but they also recognize that this is a challenge. So where are we today with, regulations such as the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act? How are, different industries being impacted by these laws? What are companies doing to mitigate the risks in the space, and how is technology helping? Well, those are some of the questions we're going to address in today's episode, and it's great to have Sung on the program to share his insights and advice on this topic. So, Sung, welcome to the program.
No, thank you for inviting me. I love having conversations about forced labor, right? It's kind of the running joke in compliance. Like, until some topic becomes hot, it's just things that we in the industry definitely think about. It's just nice to be able to have a conversation and really hopefully give people a little bit more insight and, maybe potentially even ways to kind of help them in their process. But happy to be here.
Yeah, no, that's great. And you're right. I mean, I think that, this has been a problem, obviously, for decades, right? I think, and like I said in my opening comments, I think the good news is that, the spotlight is, shining more brightly on it, than in the past. And we're seeing a growing number of regulations, I think, is probably what's prompting, a lot of this increased visibility on this issue. So maybe let's start there, because, and particularly here in the United States, because I think for a lot of folks in supply chain that might be aware of this issue or have to deal with it are probably most aware with the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act. So for those folks that may not be familiar with UFLPA, number one, what is it? And then what actions has, Customs and Border Protection taken to, enforce this law since it was enacted in 2022?
Yeah, no, it's a good starter, right? I think to your original point, the idea of government being interested in forced labor, slave labor, child labor, I think you can kind of bucket all of that into one category, has always existed. And I think in a lot of ways, they expected industry to kind of manage that, right? You remember like many decades ago, even like footwear manufacturers were getting dinged about, hey, you're using child labor. And so they had all these press announcements like, we inspect our factories and so on, and we do all these things. And you're like, that's great. I think what's different about the UFLPA is is like government mandated. Now it seems very targeted to a particular region in China. So let's just leave the politics aside, but the idea that the U.S. government's very interested in making sure that your supply chains, and we'll talk about what specific industries that are being targeted and so on, but the idea that they're saying you don't want to do business with people or companies, or even I'll call it regional government companies in a particular region in China, and let's make sure your responsibility doesn't just lie in who do I buy from, but it's who their suppliers are. And really we'll call it the end tier down in terms of the supply chain. So if you take like a retail and apparel, it's all the way down to like, not just the person that made the shirt, but the cotton maker, the ginner, the spinner, like all that concept goes way down. All of those things apply to lots of industries. And so the government's like, hey, tell us who these people are and ensure to us that you're not doing that. Enforcement is very interesting, right? UFLPA is one of the few pieces of legislation that, from what I read, is enforced by acts of Congress in terms of like its legislative congressional committee that does the investigation, which is very unlike just having CBP do the job, right? So Congress is very interested, which is, again, good and bad, right? Takes a little longer, but when they come down, the hammer's very strong. And so what CBP is doing, for example, is they said they've done something like nine, and probably the 9,000, 10,000 shipments valued around $3 billion plus they've already investigated to date, which is a lot. It seems like a lot of money, maybe not a large number of shipments. So they're doing inspections, right? But all of those are very onerous, meaning if you're one of those few shipments that got inspected, it means it's held, and they're not telling you why, other than telling you, okay, give us documentation that proves that this shipment's not has any forced labor in it. So the onus is on the industry to provide that information. But the difficulty is the industry's like, well, I don't know how to do that because we've never had to do that before, right? So the law is pretty onerous, I would say. You may not have been caught yet. You may not have been inspected yet, but the problem is when that happens, and it's probably a question of when, it's are you ready to be able to fulfill that, right? Because then the last thing you need is your goods just be stuck in a customs warehouse, and you're like, and I have no recourse until like I provide more information, right? So anyway, that's a lot. But I think UFLPA is just a start.
Yeah, no, you know, a lot to unpack there, and I think certainly the other thing you don't want is to see your company name in the front page of the Wall
No.
Street Journal or in the business section to say, hey, you've got X millions of dollars held up at customs because your products are suspected of having used forced labor in them, which has happened. I mean, I've seen articles in
Yeah.
the Wall Street Journal that's talked about big name blue chip companies that have
Yeah.
had their shipments held up at customs. And I think part of the problem is, to your point, is historically, we talk a lot about visibility and supply chain management and the importance of having quote unquote end-to-end visibility. But the sad reality is, for a lot of companies, and we've done research on this and others have done research on it as well, is that for a lot of companies, their visibility ends really after tier one, right? And then they put the responsibility on their tier one suppliers to make sure that the end tier suppliers further down the supply chain are in compliance with, any regulations or requirements and so forth. And really, at the end of the day, particularly when it comes to something like forced labor, the buck really stops with the brand owner, right? So that really now, you can't really fully outsource this responsibility to your tier one suppliers. You really have to take more ownership, of it. And I think that's what's been challenging for many companies, because this is now going to require them to make investments in people and processes and obviously technologies to really do this effectively. But I think ultimately it's got a bigger payoff, because you may be doing this because you're forced to do it because of a regulation and because specifically for forced labor and maybe even environmental violations. But ultimately it should improve. We talked a lot about supply chain risk management and supply chain resiliency. This has the added benefit of really helping companies improve their overall supply chain visibility and their ability to mitigate risks and be more resilient, overall. So let's talk a little bit about, what companies are doing or can do. I mean, I know there is a UFLPA entity list. So is it just a question of screening, through that entity list? I mean, is that enough to ensure compliance, or how else can companies, again, proactively identify and monitor, this forced labor risk?
I think people would love to hear the answer that, yeah, just screen the 68 some odd names and you're good to go. I think governments are very much in the way they write legislation is they purposely leave it vague, right? So they go, hey, you need to ensure that they don't say you need to screen just the entities we publish. It just says you need to make sure that you're not doing any business with anybody that involved in forced labor. So that obviously makes the window of names and companies much bigger than just what they publish. So then it takes a lot of research, right, in terms of whether it's third-party lists that we partner with the same company that is used by CBP, right, in terms of collecting the additional content. I think the concept of screening is actually very good, right? We want people to check names and addresses of individuals, companies, conglomerates, whoever they are. I think that process is very sound in terms of what you do. The problem is probably who you screen against and what you screen against. So you have a combination of both your own source data and then the what you check against, right? I think we're doing a much better job now of collecting the universe of, you know, the constant changes of all these companies that are affiliated or checked against, you know, the 68 companies and then their linkage, right? So I think the research done by like NGOs and again, third-party list providers, like the Charons of the world, I think that area is great, right? I think we're seeing a lot of improvement and lots of content being developed there. I think the struggle for most companies is their own data. Like, how do I collect? And you kind of hit it on the nail in the beginning. It's like, I'm really good at tier one. I might even be really good at tier two, which is, you know, it's like automotive companies are really good at tier two. It's just, where do I get the rest? And I think we have some questions later on to talk about like how we collect that. But I think the if you can get your data collected, then yes, screening is the way to monitor that, because the assumption is that you're constantly evaluating your end tiers, and the companies out there collecting the content are also actively working on updating the latest and greatest content, and that gives you the combination of both. You can obviously do other risk profile things like, you know, environmental concerns, weather, or like regional concerns. But I think ultimately the government's less interested about, okay, there was a weather event or like some kind of natural disaster in a country. You might care about that on your overall supply chain, but from a forced labor perspective, it's the connective tissue of the names and addresses on the entity plus their affiliations. And that's the monitoring that, you know, we're going to do from a content perspective. And the connection of that is the process that you want to do.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, and just like, you know, we all know supply chains are not a, you know, a static entity, right? They're constantly changing, which is why this becomes, you know, even more complex. And then I think you mentioned, you know, data, right? So data, you know, gathering the data, making sure it's accurate, making sure it's timely, making sure it's complete, so on and so forth. I mean, it all, that's always been the Achilles heel of supply chain management across the board, right? Is,
agreed.
You know, having timely, accurate, and complete data, and the whole garbage in, garbage out, and so forth, and it certainly applies here as well. So let's move on beyond, you know, the U.S. and you know, the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act, because obviously this is something that you know, other countries and jurisdictions are you know, focusing on as well. Can you maybe touch base a little bit or give some examples of what other countries and jurisdictions are doing to address this problem? And then, you know, are their efforts similar or different than from what's happening here in the US?
Yeah, I think the big splash news was probably when the European Union published their, they have a specific acronym, which I'm so bad at acronyms. We work in trade and all we live is in acronyms. But, you know, essentially they signed their equivalent of forced labor. Now, it's not specific to say the Uyghurs like the US UFLPA, but in general, they said, look, we don't want goods coming into the European Union that have forced labor in it, right? I mean, it's generically on purpose written in that way because that allows enforcement of many things, right? So it becomes industry agnostic. Now, they kind of have like targeted industries similar to the ones that the US UFLPA ties to. And I would say the precursor of that was the German Supply Chain Act, right? So Germany kind of jumped the shark and said, hey, we're going to go first. And then the European Union's like, we should probably do this. Interestingly enough, you know, they had an overwhelming majority of voters in the European Union parliament that signed off and said, this is what we're going to do, right? There's still an enforcement phase that has to kick in. Like each member state has to then agree that this is what we want to go for. It's just very European way of doing legislation, right? But I think that's the future. And you're seeing, you know, other countries lining up the equivalency of that. Canada has, they've always had, I'll call it like a slave labor, child labor type of regulation. But I think the idea of forced labor is also kind of on their radar. And I don't see any reason why, let's say UK wouldn't do something similar, because I think it's a topic that is well understood by the general public. They're like, yeah, well, I don't want to buy goods from someone that says they use forced labor, or this is includes forced labor. As we kind of already stated, the enforcement of that is difficult, but the premise is very good. And so we're seeing the rest of the world want to say that we don't want to be involved in that, right? And I think they're generically on purpose saying things like, goods made by forced labor, right? They don't say the specific region, specific country, or specific type of commodity so far. They might have targets, but I think the idea that this is the future, it's absolutely true, right? The good news is, I think the enforcement mechanisms and the way you can mitigate your risk is still going to be the same, which is the same thing we just talked about earlier, which is understanding your tiers of supply and being able to collect that information is still going to be the primary way that you're going to fulfill your risk, right? Because ultimately, this is all about risk management, right? Because you don't want to be at risk, as you said. You don't want to be the companies that got their names in, let alone the CBP website or a European Union website, the Wall Street Journal or New York Times is probably the worst place you want to be saying, hey, you got, oh, you're using forced labor in local country. Yeah, it's not good, right? So I think the idea of the managing your end tier of supply is still the right way to go. And ultimately, that gets into things like screening and so on. So the good news is, whatever process that you're putting in place for today's regulations is probably still going to be very valid for what the rest of the world ultimately does. So I think that's good. Still go back to our original premise of it's still a very much a challenge today.
Right. Yeah, and it's good also, particularly for global companies that operate in many different countries, right? Because number one, keeping track of all these different regulations and making sure you're in compliance, adds just another layer of complexity versus if you're just a U.S. company that's doing imports. But knowing that, hey, if you're really investing in the people, the processes, and the technologies to really focus on this end-tier visibility and end-tier data collection and monitoring and so forth, you're at least 80% of the way there in terms of ensuring compliance or in terms of being able to monitor and report what you're doing, in this area. So I think that's a critical piece. So what are, we talked about screening before. I mean, what else are companies doing to mitigate, the risks in the space? And then obviously, E2Open technology company, I mean, what role is technology playing in this?
Yeah, I would say kind of a couple ways that people have looked at kind of tackling this problem, right? And we'll use all the buzzwords included in all of this as well, right? I think there are companies out there that are saying, oh, look, we'll use AI and machine learning. And I joke around with the AI and machine learning because it's like, it's not actually the solution itself. It's a tool to get you to the answer, right? But that said, it's like, oh, we have all these AI and machine learning technologies, and we'll go and figure out your supply chain, and we'll map out your supply chain for you, or we'll go get all this information based on, public traded information and all of those things and create a map for you, right? And I think as an initial foray into the idea of mapping your supply chain and getting like end tiers of supply, nothing wrong with that, right? The fundamental challenge with that is the minute you map out your supply chain, the next day, your supply chain is already old, right? It's out of date because your supply chain is dynamic. It's going to change. It's not you buy from the same person every day for the next 20 years. Their suppliers are not static. Even if they are, at some point, and as you get into this end tier concept, your suppliers become dynamic. And all of a sudden, the map that you built today is not the map for tomorrow. And also, the map that you built today could have transactions that you actually performed 3 years ago that you never do again. Then all of a sudden, it's like, well, how do I know if that's actually real? Right. And it doesn't actually solve the problem of what the US government, especially for UFPPA, is asking for, which is for this shipment, tell me that that doesn't have forced labor. You show them a map and say, well, look, my map says that it doesn't. And you're like, but you're not actually proving the point, right? So I think the way we approached the problem was let's take the worst case scenario problem, which is how do we solve the legislation problem of enforcement, right? So we looked at, we call it this concept of network discovery, which is discover your network, but also base it on the actual transactions that you're performing. And I think from a fundamental, like just idea perspective, it's to say, we're going to ask your tier one, your tier two, your tier three. You're going to tell us who they are in each tier, but we're going to keep asking for them to provide the information, but ultimately tie it back to your actual transactions, right? So the functional part of this says, oh, so when I look at this purchase order that I bought, let's get into the weeds a little bit, right? And that purchase order derived a second purchase order from a supplier to a supplier, and it keeps going. And where we tie the actual bill of material of the thing that you're actually buying, right? Because the bill of material tells you all the components that were made in it. The combination of all of that allows us to actually get to the answer, which is, oh, for this shipment that was off of this order, for this material that became, you know, eight levels deep, we know that these are all the parties that were involved on that moment in time. And so when CBP does ask you, hey, for this shipment that we held and inspected, tell me the proof. You're like, oh yeah, here's my bill of material for this components, and here's all the tiers of supply and all the certi you know, the actual certificates that we've collected from them saying, yes. Now it's a little bit of self-auditing, right? But the supplier has to tell you that. So you're trusting that the supplier is giving you correct information, because I mean, at some point you have to have that level of trust, right? But then that's the documentation that CBP wants, and that is more than sufficient to say, okay, we can clear your goods. They might have questions, but you have all the documentation at that point, right? So we look at that as the most challenging problem. It's not an easy thing to do, but if you don't solve it in that level of challenge, then what exactly are you doing to fulfill the enforcement phase of it instead of just the risk mitigation? Screening is the risk mitigation part, but the enforcement part of it is what you want to have as your kind of like final sword, right? Saying, when if it comes down to this, I have my everything that I need to clear customs, which is kind of the worst case scenario. The risk mitigation allows you to do stuff so that hopefully you don't get to that level. But the assumption is at some point you're going to get inspected and you might get held, and you want to be able to prove that, right? So is as you said, it's a complicated process. It's actually something that isn't easy, but as you said, once you get this in place, you're actually solving problems beyond even UFLPA, right? Because you're getting into things like, you know, the other buzzword of the day of ESG, right? So all the environmental concerns, social responsibility, the, you know, the governance stuff that allows you to do things like, oh, maybe it's not forced labor, but I'm not supposed to do things that increase carbon footprint, right? This process allows you to do all of those things as well, but with the priority being I'll call it the hot topic of the day, which is, you know, forced labor. So it's a very nuanced answer to the solution problem. I think software is what's going to help customers, you know, any software, right? But the idea of technology being the resolution to this problem statement is the correct path. You're never going to do this manually. You're never going to do this with people power, because you just won't have enough of both, right? You just it's not something that maybe, like you said, if we said that I have one supplier and I have one commodity and that supplier only makes me one thing and that's it, then like, yeah, you don't need, you know, multiple levels of technology for that. You're good. But I don't think that's what our generic customer base, multinationals, don't operate in that way. That's very, very rare in that way, right? And so we're really looking at the problem that large companies deal with, you know, and we can even pick the industries, right? Like that we know that are the hot topics in terms of, you know, if you're in apparel or solar panels, like the things that are kind of like on the government, the Congress's kind of hot list of industries. Those things we know are multi layers of bill of materials and multi layers of supply. So you have to do this in a way where there's automation built in, and the replication of the process is very important, because otherwise you get lost. And then what exactly did you solve? You just created a bigger problem.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think that I like the focus on kind of looking at it from an enforcement standpoint and understanding, you know, what you need, you know, when ultimately you do get, you know, customs comes knocking on your door and says, hey, we've got a shipment here held, prove to us that this wasn't, you know, any forced labor was involved in this shipment, and kind of taking that perspective in terms of how, you know, what you need to do to, you know, comply with that answer or be able to provide an answer that's going to be acceptable by Customs and Border Protection. Now, I've been a big proponent of, I mean, I, you know, so the technology piece, obviously the software, but I think it's, I've always been a big evangelist and proponent of network-based technologies and network-based platforms. And I think that's the other, to me, key enabler of all this, you know, the ability to have a network where you literally have, you know, hundreds, if not and thousands of suppliers and other trading partners connected to this, because that's going to help facilitate, again, that number one, gathering of data and information that you need. But number two is what makes it more scalable and cost efficient for all the members that are part of that network, because you're not creating this network on your own. It's already an existing network, and you're able to leverage, you know, what's already been built. And to the point you raised earlier, the fact that, you know, these supply chains are dynamic, they're continuously changing all the time. So, you know, there may be already a supplier that's on the network that you're not working with today, but you may work with them tomorrow, but they're already on the network. They're already participating in this process for some other industry participant. And it just becomes much more easier, cost-effective to onboard them and to get them plugged into this process if they're already, you know, part of this network. Now you mentioned a couple of industries. I mean, what are the kind of some of the key industries? Obviously, apparel is one of them. You mentioned solar panels. What are some of the key industries that are being impacted by all this?
Yeah, I mean, interestingly enough, I think apparel, cotton, just in general. I think they generally call it like silica-based products, which is really solar panels, right? Some of the other ones, aluminum, everyone's favorite, aluminum intrusions, right? Like, it's like you can't have a trade compliance conversation without aluminum in it, I guess, is kind of the running joke on that. And then weirdly, tomatoes, I think, was one that was like an item that the I think there's another acronym. I think it's called like the Forced Labor Enforcement Task Force, which I think is a horribly sounding acronym, FLEPT, right? But they put tomatoes and even things like seafood, right? And I think UFLPA kind of focused on a part of region in the world, right? The Uyghur regions and the Xinjiang region. But I think the expansion of that concept will start adding, you know, lots of other industries. You know, you're going to start getting into things like, you know, solid cell batteries for, you know, all the EV cars, and the batteries that go into them will become another thing. There's more ESG maybe related to that as well, but I think forced labor and this will be that. As I said, I think those are like the target industry. So I think every retail and apparel company today is like, they're probably the first responders, if you want to call it that, to this process. They're like, we got to go because we're going to be targeted first, right? And so they're all kind of jumping on and figuring out what they need to do. I think the others are all starting to see that this could be a problem for me too. And so, yeah, the industry-wise, that is like the driver, right? So I think we're fine with this is the starting point, but I don't think, because you're in some space that you think you're not impacted by it, should not be the mindset. You should be thinking like, okay, am I going to be impacted? When is it like, it's a kind of question of like, when am I going to be impacted versus like, can I just kind of stay away from it because it's not me today, right? If anything you've learned from the way government legislation work is once the legislation is in place, it's always an expansion model. It's never like that focused, right? It's like, oh, what else can we target now? Because we've solved it for here. You're like, okay, well, good news for us or in our trade world, but you know, not so great for the industries. They're like, oh, wait, we're going to get targeted too. So yes, absolutely.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think any company that today is, you know, has any, you know, foreign suppliers, or, you know, they're importing any products or have suppliers in any part of the world, really, ultimately, you know, to your point, you know, this needs to be an area of focus. So Sung, I mean, we've covered a lot of ground, and certainly we can probably speak for another 2 or 3 hours on this, because it's such a meaty topic. But maybe as a way to wrap up, I mean, what questions should companies ask themselves to assess if they have, you know, the right people, processes, and technologies to effectively monitor and mitigate, you know, these forced labor risks?
Yeah, I'm going to turn your question around a little bit and look at it in. Sorry, I think my headset's kind of disconnecting here. And look at it in terms of the process part, right? In terms of like, what can they do, or how do they get ready for it? And I think we kind of touched on the two broad topics, right? One is the concept of risk and risk mitigation. And the second is like, how do I manage the enforcement phase, right? And I think when companies look at this topic in general, they should look at it as like, where do I start it's what are the process that I need to start should be first about risk and the risk mitigation part. So that's really where screening comes in. And you'll see a lot of people start their process with screening because it's like a low-hanging fruit, right? It's easier. They sort of know who their suppliers are today, like at least some subset. So they should start that and get well versed in how to manage their screening process, right? For suppliers. And then if they can get N-tier suppliers, great. But that's kind of like the initial focus is what do I have and what can I check against is a good starting point because it's frankly, it's easier, right? But right behind that is okay, now that I've done that, let's start figuring out the next phase of which is the enforcement phase, which is coming, right? It's more and more enforcement's happening. So I need to be prepared for that. So if I logically break my projects, if you want to call it that, into two things, start one with the easy hanging fruit, the low hanging fruit, and the other one is the larger, more difficult problem, but start getting prepared for that. I think it's a way to look at how I can get myself to the end state without trying to look at how do I tackle all of this all at once? Because it's like, that's never really going to be that successful. You'll never be prepared to do that unless you've already started the journey, right? And even then, it's like, how do I get there? So in a way, the right people thing is get yourself started. If you don't have a very foundational risk management strategy around who I do business with and screen against those, you should definitely put that in like box number one and say, that's where we're going to start. And then now let's talk about how I get to the next phase of truly getting my supply chain resilient with all the, validating and making sure like the N-tier supply and the actual transactions are okay. Because that is obviously a larger problem and it takes a little longer runway, but you don't want to start with that without the risks part because you can't really prove that you're doing any risk mitigation while you're building your network, right? You want to have that screening in place so that when your network comes in and you start having that data, your screening is already automatic, right? You're already having risk. And you're just adding more data to it. So I look at it, I'm answering your question slightly differently in that if you look at the way you want to do your process, that will actually help you identify if you have the right people, is my process in place? Because it kind of adds and stacks on top of each other. And that's where I think I always have that conversation in that way. Say, like, what are you doing here first? And what are you going to do second? Because this is a journey, right? This is not, I'm plugging this in and I'm going to go away. There's an ever-evolving journey because, as we've kind of stated in the very beginning, the legislation's change and the government's decision on how they want to do this is not static. It's relatively fluid. And so you have to have some dynamic nature into the way you deploy this as well.
Yeah, no, and I like the way you kind of changed the perspective on the question. I think it's right on. I mean, I think, and you're right. I mean, I think for a lot of companies, they look at this and they see a huge mountain, right? And and I always make the analogy, it's like, oh my gosh, how am I ever going to run a marathon or how am I ever going to cycle 100 miles? Well, it's one step at a time, right? Or one, 1 mile at a time. And knowing where to start or how to start is what holds up a lot of companies. So I think your advice there is spot on in terms of really putting in place kind of the screening aspect first, because it's the low hanging fruit, if you will, and it really serves as that foundation for the next step, which is also important. Well, Sung, again, thank you for making the time to be with us and sharing your insights and advice on this topic, which, again, I think it's only going to grow in importance in the months and years ahead, and I'm sure we'll have more conversations down the road in terms of lessons learned and best practices as companies continue to move along this journey. So again, thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, no, thank you for inviting me. Happy to have a conversation.
Great. I want to thank those of you that joined us. If you're watching this episode on demand, either at the E2Open website or on Talking Logistics, and you've got a question or a comment for Sung, you can post it there, and I'm sure he'll be more than happy to respond via that medium. Again, thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a
All right,
great
thank
day.
you. All right, bye-bye.